Did you get me?
Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Homefront on Missouri Grassroots Radio. I'm Cynthia Davis, your host. As a writer, speaker, and former legislator, we discuss limiting government, fiscal responsibility, and fair taxation. I'm a mother of seven and a wife of one for over three decades, so I bring you my personal experience. And now it's time for Homefront with Cynthia Davis. Glad you could join us this evening. We have an amazing guest tonight who is going to thrill and delight us as we talk about our favorite subject, taxation. Now, I know that not everybody's all excited about that, and I realize it's a tough subject. And even as I wrote my newsletter today and sent it out, I realized that, you know, how do you talk about taxes and our money being wrestled from us without making it depressing? But it's okay, because there are better ideas than what we've got right now. And here to discuss some of the options is Earl Williamson. He is the executive director for the Missouri Tax Fair Tax Group, and they're affiliated with Americans for Fair Taxation. What makes Earl so special is he's a retired math and science teacher, and he also drives a bus. So, Earl, we're so excited to have you tonight. Thank you for joining us.
It's good to talk to you, Cynthia. Thank you for having us.
I asked Earl if he thought he could handle the complexity of fair tax because it is so complicated, and he told us not to worry. He is a retired teacher. He has spent decades in the classroom trying to explain very difficult, what, algebra? Did you teach algebra and geometry?
Yes, I did a little bit of algebra and geometry, but primarily it was chemistry, physics, general science, biology. I did basic math as well, intro to
physics,
computers, Spanish by satellite, just a variety of things over 29 years.
You impressed me enough when you said physics. So anybody who understands physics can talk about taxation in a reasonable manner. My husband told me that if he should die before I do, he wants me to put on his tombstone, no more death, no more taxes.
Oh, my.
Yeah, that's how excited he is about the topic. But here's the point. I don't want to depress anybody. I want to talk about other ideas. I mean, it's probably a really hard topic, but I remember when I was at the conference, the American Legislative Exchange Council, as a legislator, and there was a booth that said, wouldn't it be great if April 15th were just another day on the calendar? And I like April 15th as much as anybody does, but, yeah, it does put a little reminder of the invasiveness of government and the iron fist of government, because if it were all really about helping people, then our local charity would be plenty adequate. So you're going to have a rally on Monday. Can you tell us a little bit about that?
Sure, Cynthia. There is a Million Man March coming up this weekend in Washington, D.C., and while I'd love to be there, not everybody can go. I really can't. So there was an idea floated that, you know, we could have a rally at our state capitol on April the 15th, which is the Monday, and if we ran it from noon until 9 p.m., then a lot of working folk could get there because, you know, a lot of folk work. And when they get done work, then they could come by. You can actually get to your state capital. It's kind of hard to get to Washington, D.C. and make it to work Monday.
And they're scheduling a beautiful day. I remember in when the Tea Party movement just was beginning, there were some folks who wanted to have a rally in 2009, I believe, outside the capital of Missouri, and they invited me to come and speak. And it was, I have to say, it felt like a cleansing. I stood there at the microphone and got to spill my guts about why this is wrong and what we need to do to correct it. And it was, I guess there's a lot of pent-up frustration over the wrongness of it. A lot of people see taxation as a fiscal issue, but it's a moral issue as well, because nobody, well, there may be some people, I haven't seen a checkoff box on the income tax form yet that said, and if you feel like your amount is too low, check here to donate a little bit more.
Well, the government is not loath to take extra money. They're certainly not going to volunteer that you paid too much. But if you paid too little, they're sure going to knock on your door and let you know about that as soon as they possibly can.
Well, I wrote my newsletter today, as I do every week. And if you'd like to subscribe to it, you can simply go to my website, votecynthia.com, and sign up for my newsletter. And you'll learn all, although I'm not running for anything, but the name is still easy to remember, votecynthia.com. And I send out my newsletter today talking about taxation and letting people know how we're going to have you on tonight. And here's some replies that I got. One person wrote and said, I was told they don't use our income taxes to run the government anyway. If this is true, what do they use it for? And here's another one. Somebody wrote, when more of the people's substance is extracted through the form of taxation than what is necessary to meet the just obligations of the government and the expense of the administration, such an exaction becomes a ruthless extortion and a violation of the fundamental principles of a free government. Now, this is a quote from, do you know who made that quote?
I'm not sure, but that sounds very founding in principle to me.
It was Grover Cleveland, said this in his second annual message to Congress on December 6th of 1886. So that was 126 years ago or so that they were already back then talking about the problems. And that was before 1913. So somebody back then, before the income tax was even created, wanted us to know, 100 years later, 120 years later or so, just wanted to make sure we knew that this is a violation of the fundamental principles of a free government. So then he wrote, my newsletter recipient wrote back to me, how we tax and whom we tax is less important than how much we tax and for what purposes. So any taxation on any level using any methods is thievery. This is what my constituent wrote me. One last thing somebody wrote me, and this is a whole new twist on it. She wrote, for the past several years, I've enjoyed inviting my close friends to my home on April 15th for beans and cornbread, asking them to bring something for the food pantry for the Salvation Army. It's been fun, and I do appreciate that we still have a choice. And I urge everyone to think about how much fun we can have if we celebrate with beans and cornbread. Now, I accept this with the spirit with which it was intended, but boy, the beans and cornbread has a significant meaning. And I remember when I was on the freshman orientation tour, we toured all over Missouri to learn how we're supposed to legislate, and we stopped off at a community college down in the southeastern part, and they served the legislators beans and cornbread to try and make a statement about how poor they are and how they wish we would give them more money to run their colleges. But nevertheless, it saddens me to think that we should be more prosperous than ever before. And we should, you know what, I understand why governments have to borrow money when they're having a startup cost, like George Washington and the guys at Valley Forge, and their feet were bloody and they had to wrap them with burlap straps and leave blood in the snow. And, you know, that's sad. And most of them hung on just because they knew their contract was going to, if they stayed till the contract was up on January 1st, they'd get paid. Now, we don't expect our government to live on that meager terms, but back then they knew honor, and they knew the importance of taking care of people and not going outside your obligations. My question is, how did our government become such spendthrifts that we now are asking the question of how we should get more money all the time?
Well, that's a great question. First of all, I would say that our government has stepped outside of its constitutional authorities into various aspects that are not part of the duties and responsibilities of the federal government as established in the Constitution. They have done everything they can to stretch that and push that so that they control everything. It wasn't supposed to be like that. The states were supposed to be a great counterbalance. And in 1913, huge changes took place in this country. The 16th, the 17th, and the 18th Amendments were just pernicious pieces of stuff. We figured out the 18th pretty quick because we don't like food police. That one came to an end, but we absolutely failed to understand the effect of the 16th and the 17th Amendments. We're paying for it now. Let me put it to you like this. You had someone who wrote and said that how we tax is not as important as how much, and I would actually take exception. Until the amount gets very large and then it becomes a moot point, I would suggest that how the taxes are collected are significantly more important than the how much. Like I said, until it gets to be exorbitant. Let me ask your listeners some questions here, Ms. Davis, and you kind of play along with me.
Okay.
Because we need to understand the income tax that we have before we can really buy into alternatives, because we've had this within living memory and nothing else. So, question one, who owns your body?
Well, the last I checked, I did, although, you know, with Obamacare.
Yeah, they're working towards claiming that, too. You can't eat this, you can't eat that, because, you know, we have to take care of you. Gee, I got a problem with that, but that's another story. Next question. Who should own the fruits of your labor?
Well, we all work very hard, at least the people I'm with, and we work for a reward. I mean, we work for the purpose of serving people, but, you know, if we don't serve people, then the natural free market dynamics kick in, and then we don't get to eat. So the old expression is, if a man will not work, neither let him eat. But then if a man works hard and is prosperous and successful, and if we do something well and with excellence, then there is built-in free market reward for our work. And that's fully appropriate. And then if you have the problem of having too much, you can pick who you want to give it to.
That's true. So the basic line, bottom line there is, the person who works is the person who should be paid.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Okay. And again, we agree. The last question, and then I'll get into my explanation for your audience. What is it called when you're denied the fruits of your own labor?
Okay, like, for example, if you lived in a communist country?
Yeah, in a communist country, that's pretty close.
Where everybody has to share in a commonwealth.
Well, if you work and you're supposed to be paid, but you work and somebody else takes it, most people would say that's wrong. Wouldn't you agree?
Yes, that would be wrong. That would be a thief. A thief would take your money that you,
right,
you earned.
And for this, I choose something significantly harsher. Look, back in the day in this country, we had people that would work from dawn to dusk. Someone else took the fruits of their labor. I believe we fought a war to end that kind of behavior. Is that not the very essence of slavery itself?
Well, it sounds to me like it would be.
Okay. And if that's the case, then for those of you who would like to play along with me, just hold up your hand and look at it. And if you take the guy in the 15% tax bracket, which is the lowest tax bracket, and you make him pay the 7.5% FICA, if you fold over your pinky, you realize that this person, over 20% of their pay is taken before they ever see it. Now, how is that person anything more than an unpaid laborer for their own government 1 out of every 5 minutes that they work?
Yep,
when is it ever okay to be a slave? And I would submit never.
And I would submit that they're taking way more FICA from me than you, because I'm self-employed, which means I automatically pay double.
Well, I understand that. But, you know, if we take and follow this out a little further, let's soak the rich at 40%, fold over another finger. We don't even have to worry about the FICA or anything like that anymore. Just fold over that next finger. Wiggle the three fingers that are left. Ladies and gentlemen, what is it that was counted in the original census of the United States as 3/5 of a person? And the answer has to be slaves, because that's what they were. They were counted as 3/5. The 3/5 argument. Ladies and gentlemen, we have a tax code that has enslaved the citizenry in this country. I submit that any tax code that enslaves the citizen is inherently evil, wrong, wicked, anathema. It is something to be despised, destroyed, done away with as soon as possible, especially when there are other ways to collect the taxes. And now, I can begin to talk about the fair tax, because the fair tax is an alternative method for collecting the taxes from the people. It is actual freedom. And the way the fair tax proposal is, every citizen would be untaxed up to the poverty level. As long as you didn't spend above poverty level, basically you don't pay taxes to the federal government. That's
well,
how
Earl,
it's designed.
Are you done telling us which fingers to put down?
Yes, you put down
okay.
your hands. I tend to get excited. I'm sorry, guys.
Okay, that's okay. There's some people who feel that until we resolve the spending problem, nothing is going to work, because the federal government has made they've made themselves look incredibly inept, and like they don't know the value of a dollar, they don't know the value of a dime or a penny, they don't seem to tune in to the value of any money. It's meaningless. They've turned it into monopoly money and squandered the future. Our prosperity of this nation is going down the drain because they don't know how to hold the line on anything. So we've watched them for a decade now. Every time a continuing resolution comes up, they pass it. They raise the debt ceiling. They spend more money every year. George W. Bush was one of the worst for spending, and Obama is just as bad. So it's not a partisan problem that can be resolved by either party, because both Republicans and Democrats have cut down everything and mortgaged our future.
As long as you do not own the fruits of your labor, as long as the government figures that it's theirs, that whatever you have is something that they deem you should have, and you can live with that, and the rest of it they can take. That's going to leave us all in poverty. I understand that this is about the fundraising side. This is the taxation side. This is not spending. And that's a battle that, if I'm ever going to have a prayer of this passing, I'll never get it done if I have to cap the spending. But the advantage of the fair tax is it's transparency. It is figured into the cost of goods, but when you go and buy, like say, right now $100 worth of goods, and you take it off the shelf and you take it up to the counter, and they add sales tax on and all that, out of that $100 of material that you bring up, how much of that is hidden taxes today as a national average?
I don't know.
Because of our tax structure, the national average of embedded tax in new goods is 22%. To compare it, the fair tax would be an embedded 23%, replacing almost all of the 22%.
Wait a minute, though. 23 is more than 22.
I agree. But go back to that hand. You remember the guy in the bottom where the pinky was folded over? If you wiggle them four fingers that are left, that's what he's living on now. If he could take home that 20% that's stolen from him, that would be like taking home a 25% increase in take-home pay. If the cost of goods raised even 10%, which I don't believe that it will, the studies don't show that it will, you can take care of a lot of 10% if you're bringing home a 25% increase in take-home pay.
Why would it need to be 23%? Why couldn't it be something like 2%?
Well, because when this was designed, the folks that were asking that this be looked at as a possibility to see if it could be developed and to see what would come of it, required a few things. First of all, it had to be transparent, it had to be easy to understand, and it had to produce the same amount of income to the federal government as was being produced.
Okay, well, there's the point, there's the rub, because there are a lot of people who don't believe the federal government needs all that money, and they have the right to currently inflate it to any amount in addition.
Well,
I've got a...
That I don't understand. But the beauty of the fair tax is, because it is a national sales tax, it is transparent. Right there on the bill, 23% of what you spent for this item, and it's the way it's figured in the cost of the goods. So if you take $100 up, you pay $100, and 23 of those dollars, it prints it out in red on your ticket and says, this is what you spent to support your federal government today, thank you very much. If they monkey with that, that becomes immediately obvious to everyone.
Mm-hmm. Earl,
so they can't they can't sneak a tax in on, oh, let's say banks. Let's punish banks. So we'll tax the banks. And of course, banks don't make money. They just, they have to get money from the people that they serve, their customers, to pay the taxes, and that raises the cost on everybody in the country.
Right. Earl, we have a caller. Caller, what is your question?
Hey, not a question so much as a comment. My name is Fred, and I know Earl real well. I'm one of the grassroots volunteers with the Fair Tax, too, and I intend to be at the rally. I think it's a great thing that we're doing, and I hope we have a great turnout, and I appreciate you putting this on your radio. But going back to the income tax for a second, one of the things that we don't think about is how much sovereignty the income tax has taken away from individuals and states, and how much corruption that it is responsible for as our elected officials in Washington try to tweak human behavior to do this or that. And what you get is kind of a revolving door between the tax revenues that are brought in, favors given to lobbyists, and then that money comes back oftentimes as campaign contributions laundered through one format or another. So, I don't think we really know how much money it will take to run the government, because there is so much fraud, waste, and abuse in the amount of money the government spends each year. And whether the 23% is the right number or not for setting the tax rate, I don't think we know. For in the year 2008, when they first pegged that number, that was the number that was needed for the tax to be neutral so that a person's basically it would bring in enough money to fund the government and be neutral as far as how much the average person was paying before we went to the fair tax. The other thing is talking about sovereignty, individual sovereignty, also state sovereignty. Under the current system, you know, the federal government has the IRS in every facet of our personal lives, and it's worse now and will be worse under Obamacare to the point where we really have no privacy. But so, you know, we're all providing our money to the federal government, and if there's even a whip stitch out of place, we've got the force of the IRS to whip us back in line and penalize us tremendously, too. And sometimes, you know, you don't ever even get your say in court. You're guilty you're guilty before you even had a chance to prove that you're not. And under the fair tax, the thing that I love about it is the tax money is collected by the states and then provided to the federal government. And you don't have any way for our elected officials to use the lobbyists to get favors for each other. So that in itself will do it, I think, just will be a godsend for getting us back to our constitutional roots.
Well, on another point here, this will allow us to shrink the government.
Well, only if
Absolutely.
The amount... I think it'd be better if it weren't revenue neutral, if it were an actual decrease to government, because they have proven time and time, and it's not just the federal government, even the state of Missouri has fluff in it. That I was hearing a 100-year-old woman was interviewed, and they asked her, what is the worst invention you've seen? And she said, it's the credit card, because before people had credit cards, they had some discipline in their lives, and they didn't presume on the future. Well, government has made the worst model of how to be irresponsible in mortgaging our future and putting it all on the credit card. Why do we have any debt at all? It's that we're afraid to tighten the belts.
Well, and you're not going to get an argument from me on that. But if you want to restrict government, if you want to have a chance to shrink government, I would suggest pass the fair tax. The corruption issue is, by and of itself, well worthy of consideration. But let's take a look at another. Some folks think that this would completely do away with the IRS, which it does. In the 3-year period, the IRS goes away. There is an Office of Administration, which is created, which does administer the 50 states, the 800,000 businesses, and what other entities also collect the federal tax, but you don't need IRS agents to collect tax. So you could drastically reduce the size of the IRS in this regard. But remember how I told you the other day, Cynthia, that I could take an IRS agent and turn him from a heel into a hero? Well, here we go. If you pass the fair tax, April the 15th does become another beautiful spring day. You know, we can reduce the IRS. We could fire these people, but I think that would be a mistake. These people work. They're citizens like you and I are. They work. They pay taxes. They have to be as frustrated as you and I are as to how it's thrown down a rat hole. How about, instead of firing these people that we could let go, how about let's keep them, turn them loose on waste, fraud, and abuse in Medicare, Medicaid, Social Security, welfare, military contracting, just for starters. I'm pretty sure that they would save way more than they cost. And they would be working for the citizen instead of against the citizen. Heck, they would actually be working for themselves. I've just given an IRS agent a better job description than they have today.
Yes, you have. Earl, we have another caller. Can I? Can you entertain one more question?
Oh, I'll do the best I can. I try to entertain as many as I can.
We'll entertain them all. Okay, caller, go ahead with your question.
Yes, I'm Beverly, and it's not so much a question as a comment. Several. First, I noticed you, Cynthia, thought that the fair tax was a hard topic. and complicated. And I am not a complicated person. I became interested in the fair tax 4 years ago, and what impressed me the most about it was that I could actually look at that bill, read it, and understand it. And I thought, what a difference from today's 73,000 pages, a complete idiocy that no one can understand, which is the reason that it's that way. It's very deliberate. So it is not difficult to understand. Secondly, whoever wrote in and said that you kind of liked having a choice, well, you don't have a choice with the IRS. If you don't pay, you are going to suffer severe penalties, and that can include your liberty. It can include your life. We've known people who have committed suicide because they could not, they just could not deal with the loss of businesses, the loss of homes. The IRS, the tyranny it has over our nation is amazing. And then the other thing was, the tax code cannot control spending. That is a completely separate issue. But one of the things I like about the fair tax, if I didn't like what was happening in Washington, and believe you me, I don't, I would be buying used from now till whenever the next administration is put into place. Because if you buy used, there's no tax on that purchase. And it is not only does it get rid of that political corruption, because when you don't have a tax code, you don't have the K Street lobbyist industry making a lot of money in exchange for loopholes. And politicians get rich and they get donations. It's a scam business. That's all it is. So when you get rid of the IRS, you have that freedom with the fair tax of deciding, I'm going to buy used because I really am going to make a statement about my money and how the government is spending it. And I won't spend. I'll put my money in the bank to save till later. So you have a much better code. It is much easier to enforce because you don't have as many people to look at. It's businesses only. And in the fair tax, it clearly says in the bill that if they bring charges against your business, you are automatically innocent. The government must prove that you're guilty. And if they cannot do so, then you, as the person who's been charged, you have the right to sue for the cost of your legal, whatever it costs you legally. It's an entirely different way of looking at taxes. And we never, ever should submit to someone taking our wealth. No, that is completely wrong. God gave us the liberty to be free, and that means that what I produce is mine, and I will give it up when I'm ready to. And besides, our income tax is killing our nation. You know, Earl can probably talk about what it's doing to our overseas ability to compete. So that's my comment. It's not difficult.
Well, Bart, let me thank you, first of all. Let me thank you for your comment because it's well taken. One of the points, though, that you also bring up is the arbitrary nature of taxation and how invasive it is. The Fourth Amendment of the Constitution says the government does not have a right to search us without a search warrant, and the income tax system has done, in effect, created a search of our papers without a search warrant.
Oh, you're not going to get an argument from me on that. That's absolutely correct. I'm sorry, Beverly, wasn't it?
Yes.
Beverly.
I heard Representative Linder speak up in Hillsdale College. And he said that the IRS, the government, should never know how much money you make, because as soon as it knows how much money you make, it also knows how you made it. And it will do everything in its power to take it from you. And I believe that is true. And I believe that the way it is set up right now, the government will take as much money as it can from its citizens, like slavery, until it leaves you just enough that you will not revolt against it. And if more people were suffering from taxation to the point that they can no longer afford it, I think we would have an easier time passing the fair tax. But the government knows that people tend to suffer quite a long time before they will actually do something. And it's invasive. It is against what the Creator gave us as liberty. and it is corrupt.
The Fourth Amendment says the right of the people to be secure in their persons, houses, papers, and effects against unreasonable searches and seizures shall not be violated, and no warrants shall issue, but upon probable cause. So when you look at what we've done to ourselves, we have seen our property be seized and our paper searched, and it's getting worse. The bigger government gets, the more insatiable its appetite becomes to continue to get bigger yet. And now we've got a group of people who are being manipulated by the tax code, including the parts that cannot be easily determined. I heard a joke about an accountant that if you want a good accountant, instead of asking him what is the correct number, he will respond back to you, what do you want the correct number to be? And this should scare all of us. When you think about how are we going to go forth and be intelligent about running an honorable society and being honest when there are many ways, it depends on what you call something, what the correct dollar amount is. And they're honest people, citizens who've tortured themselves trying to find what is that real number. And there's just so much gray in our tax code.
Well, let's take a look at the effects of tax code. I have a doctor in town who had to resurface his parking lot at his business. Did he go with the cheapest bid? Did he go with the least expensive material? No, he picked up the phone and he called his tax accountant to find out if there were any tax benefits, breaks, whatever, penalties for doing what he was going to do. Before, in other words, he was making a business decision. Instead of making it on business principles, he was making it on tax principles. What a crappy way to do business.
And the same with energy.
And we wonder why our economy is tanking. Well, let's go back to the basics of this current tax code. It is an income tax, a progressive income tax. Well, the founder of Marxism socialism, Karl Marx, in his second plank of the Communist Manifesto, states that you must have a heavily progressive income tax. It is designed to destroy free market economies. Is the tax code broken? Heck no, Cynthia. The tax code is working perfectly. It's working better today than it ever has. It is destroying us at warp speed now.
Well, I happen to be the executive director for the Center for Marriage Policy, and we've been studying the question of marriage and what is happening with our tax code as it pertains to marriage. And as you probably know from watching the news, there's a lot of push right now to allow homosexuals to get married. Well, that's wreaking havoc with the tax code, and I don't believe they really want to get married. As much as they want the tax breaks and tax advantage or a definition of property, and we've seen a lot of, frankly, what is it government's business what you're doing in the privacy of your home anyway? What is government's business is when you file your 1040 and you have to figure out which way would it be most advantageous.
Okay, and that brings us to a perfect point, because what you're talking about is one of many things that I consider where government really shouldn't have any business. But can you name something that tax code does not affect? And the answer is anymore. You can't find it. Tax code affects everything, which is why I understand that fair tax is an answer to so many problems, and I know that it would be such a good thing for us as a country. But I also know that it's not the only thing. However, It's the only thing I know of that touches everything else, which is what makes it a key thing. Because if you keep a communist tax code, you have to understand the current tax code is not about raising money so much as it is about control of the citizen.
And they are being controlled. Wait till, yes, when we see more Obamacare. There's already plenty of Obamacare starting now, but it will be more problematic when people are using, you know, when the government is using the income tax return to punish those who don't have medical insurance as if it's any of their business. Since when does your insurance status show up on your income tax return? I mean, we got to be intelligent about what's our right to have our freedom.
Well, when you talk about intelligence, my wife and I are beyond childbearing years. Why should we have insurance that would cover her for being pregnant? We did that when she could be, but now under Obamacare, you know, we're going to have to take care of, you know, pregnancy, and we've got other things on our plate. And should some kid have to supplement me? I don't think that's right.
So is it possible that we could elect better people to represent us in government, and they could, on their own,
on their own, by themselves, they're not going to be effective. They have to be able to identify each other. They need to be constitutionally conservative. Principled, I think, is the word. And it's going to be a very difficult fight because the current system is so corrupt, because it is designed to corrupt, because it is designed to support the corrupt. We have such a terrible time. One of the things I like about the fair tax is it's not a European communist Marxist philosophy. The fair tax is actually an American idea. It's not a Democrat idea. It's not a Republican idea. It's actually an American idea, an American solution to a problem that we really shouldn't have. You know, I made the slavery argument earlier. You know, slavery died in this country basically 1865, but it was reestablished in 1913 with the 16th Amendment.
What actually is happening right now with the fair tax movement? Is it growing bigger or is it shrinking smaller?
Well, I have to say it's growing bigger. This rally, I didn't know if I was going to have enough speakers. We stuck our neck way out. Well, we're going from noon until 9 p.m. Well, right now, I have two, maybe three slots at the most left, and I'm talking basically a new speaker on an average about every 15 minutes from noon until 9 p.m. And I haven't even put in a bunch of the fair tax directors who are quite capable speakers in and of their own right. The point is, we have so many people that are going in freedom's direction that we have a commonality. The more people know, the more people understand. Let me put it to you like this. In the studies that were done when the fair tax was developed, and people who were ignorant about tax code, were educated about tax codes, and were asked, how would you like, you know, what way would you like to pay your taxes? When you have an 82% approval of the fair tax among people who didn't know but now understand, how is that a loser? That's not. Among the people in this country, this is an idea that makes sense. Will it take place? Not with the current leadership in the parties, because the current leadership in the parties are absolutely wedded to the corruption that the current code produces.
So what do you predict is going to happen? If we're on a collision course, if something doesn't happen soon, there's a strong indicator we're going to be the same as Greece, and there'll be nothing to talk about. Our economy will be flattened, and then there'll
We will be Zimbabwe.
Zimbabwe. Do they have cell phones in Zimbabwe?
If you're among the rich and the leadership and the intelligentsia, I'm sure you do. But as for the rest, well, you know.
You and I are both over 50, and there's a point where we're starting to run out of patience. If they can't get this thing right in the next few years, how much longer are we going to wait?
Well, hopefully not until I'm dead.
Well, we can put that same motto on your tombstone that we're going to put on my husband's. Maybe they'll give us a deal. No more. Anyway. Maybe it's just me.
Maybe I'm tilting at windmills. But let me put it to you like this. I believe in equal treatment under the law. If it is not equal treatment under the law, it is wrong, period. I have no claim on your life, your time, your product, unless you have incurred some kind of a debt to me, in which case then I do have a claim. But you don't have a claim on me, and I don't have a claim on you.
The problem is government is growing so big, so fast, so quick.
And again, that's growth side.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I'm hoping that on the taxation side, we can find a way to starve it out. The fair tax actually does help with that. Beverly pointed out that under the fair tax, well, let me ask a question, because I don't really know how far you are into the weeds on this stuff, but the philosophy of the fair tax is tax everything, tax all new goods and services, untax every citizen up to the poverty level. To do that, there's a thing called a prebate. And the prebate actually represents freedom. Has that ever been explained?
Well, the problem is we're doing deals with the devil. And
well, I'm not. I refuse to.
Forgive me for using the word we. But the problem is there's a sinister undercurrent that is defying the premise of all of this. And that is, you know, we need to do what's right. And you know, this idea that we need to make exceptions for certain people is patently wrong. We need to help each other. If you've got a family member who's sick and infirmed and or can't work for a variety of reasons,
you take care of them.
Yeah, that's what family does. If you have no family, then that's what church does. If you have no church, then that's what community should do.
But that's what government has stepped in. It doesn't let the church do it anymore. It doesn't let the community do it anymore.
Well, until we get to the root of the problem, then all of this is just trimming around the edges.
I'm not going to disagree with you entirely on that. But if you're going to take a bite out of something, this is a big bite right here. To make your taxes transparent, clear, where they can't fiddle around behind the scenes and do things behind people's backs, where everything is out in the open for a change, nothing hidden, that's big.
And if anybody else would like to call in with a question for Earl, you can call at area code 347-677-1835. That's 347-677-1835. So, Earl, it's all big, and I love having you on our show. And I'd like you to just real quick give us a summary of what we need to do as citizens, as fiscal conservatives who understand the proper role of government. What can be done if the people in office appear to be deaf?
Okay. The first thing you do is you have to confront your representatives. You have to hold their feet to the fire. You have to hold them accountable. If they are not, then you do need to seek to replace them. Now, how do you get a scorecard for that? One of the great groups for scorecards is going to be speaking, I believe, at our rally, and that's the Locke and Smith group. And they're the ones that are looking at legislation in Missouri. As you know, you're the first winner of the, what is it, the Rock Rib Conservative Award. You know, it really tickles me that you got that, and I'm sorry you're still not in a position to be doing the things that you used to do. But another group that's going to be speaking at this is the Political Chips group out of Kansas, which holds their representatives accountable. Those that have failed, they have targeted and in a number of cases actually taken out and primaried out and replaced with conservatives. Okay? And that's a group that folks might want to get to know about a little bit about at the rally that we're having this coming Monday.
Well, you know, that's exciting knowing that they got some good people elected. Do you know if there's been any fruit from having the turnover in Kansas?
Well, let me put you like this. They've had discussions about things that they haven't had. For example, recording every vote taken. The people who proposed that, which was one of the things that this group wanted, got slapped down, and these folks stood up for their representatives, and they wound up getting an apology out of the leadership. But that's one example.
Yeah,
you know,
that's
if
a
you
step
if
in
you
the
have
way.
You know, a legislator who explains every vote that he takes each week and why, you have a gift that is golden. Even if you don't agree, you have somebody there who explains it. It's out in the open. He does his job, you know?
That's good. And, Earl, we have one more caller with a question. Are you a caller? Are you with us?
Yes, yes, I am. I do have a question. I want to know how the CARES Act, does it help or hurt the housing industry? I've heard a lot of people say, oh, the housing industry doesn't favor the CARES Act. I'd like to know whether it helps or hurts it.
Yes, because I've heard that too, that there would be a tax on the sale of a house, which if you're spending hundreds of thousands of dollars could be exorbitant. Well, how do you answer that, Earl?
Well, that one is actually easy. First of all, if it's a used home, there's no tax on used goods. Sales of used homes are a bigger part of the market than new homes.
Oh, for goodness sake.
Number two, okay, let's say it's a new home. Okay, the tax is going to be incurred in both materials and labor. Well, it's already incurred in materials and labor. You remember that 22% buried?
Yes.
Well, it's in there now.
Mm-hmm.
All you're doing is replacing it with 23. Now, it may raise the cost of a new home some. And I think that's fair to say, some. Not a huge amount. But let's go back to the effect that it has on the worker. The guy that can bring home 25% more in take-home pay can save so much faster to buy a home, to have a down payment, than he can today.
I remember when I was on the in city government, I was an elected official on the O'Fallon Board of Aldermen, and there was a very large corporation that wanted to come to O'Fallon, and so they asked the city of O'Fallon if our city would buy all their building materials because the city is tax exempt. So I guess there'll always be a way around it.
Actually, the whole purpose is equal treatment under the law.
Yeah.
Now, and people will always try to get around it. And that's the reason you would have the Office of Administration, because when you find cheaters, you would need to make good examples out of that. I understand that. But it's like economic zones or special tax credits or all this other stuff. These are nothing more than special tax brackets for special people. Well, if it's good for one, it ought to be good for all of us. How about,
that's right.
How about giving us all the tax break for a change?
Yeah, well, we saw plenty of that. I'm just telling you what I observed. I didn't know what was going on, but the amount of the sales tax on the building, on the construction materials, was over $200,000 that was now not going to go to the normal proper taxing. I mean, it was a multi-million dollar building, so you can imagine.
Well, I understand. I mean, if you want to talk about tax code, you talk about jobs going overseas. Here's a simple one. The United States has the highest corporate tax rate in the world at 35%. We tax our goods 35%, send them overseas, and try to be competitive. That's not working so well.
No.
Communist China, the tax rate is only 25% when they bother to collect it. Ireland is only 12.5%. Gee, I'm old enough that I remember when Chrysler Corporation merged with Daimler-Benz, and I never understood why it became Daimler-Chrysler until I got to understanding tax code like this, and then I realized all the corporate lawyers did was look at the tax code in Germany, they looked at the tax code in the United States, and the tax code in Germany was so much better for business that all those high-paying corporate jobs went overseas.
No wonder. Plus, if you move to Ireland, you have better corned beef and cabbage, I hear.
Oh, I understand the Guinness is excellent.
Here's the point. We're going to have a rally at the Capitol. I will be there. I think I will be anybody can come and go. Right?
Yes,
but
it's open to the public. We're encouraging folks to come by. We have a great many freedom-minded groups that are going to be there. We're going to have speakers all day long. We will have speakers outside on the steps. We will have speakers inside of the rotunda at the Capitol. We're trying to get as much of the message heard inside as well as outside. And as we tag on out toward the end of the day, we happen to be across the street from the post office in Jefferson City, and we're going to be inviting people who are late tax filers to come and join the crazies.
Very nice. And are you going to have a website or some place where people can go for more details?
You know, I should have had that with me, and
it's
I don't.
Hey, I'm still on the line.
Go ahead, Fred.
It's mofairtaxrally.com. mofairtaxrally.com.
Okay, so
okay.
if you want more details, you can go to
mofairtaxrally.com.
That's right.
Thank you, Fred, for the extra
information.
And you have a good evening. Glad we could have you join us tonight.
All right. Take care.
Thank you. Well, we are getting near the end of our time. Very grateful to you, Earl. I'll see you Monday. I think I'll be speaking around 1:40. Is that correct?
Oh, I believe that's correct. I would have to look, and again, that's on my computer, which is not where I am.
Well, thank you for coming. You are a blessing. Thank you. Keep up the hard work and keep the faith. Help is on the way.
Thank you very much, Cynthia.
This has been another edition of Homefront on Missouri Grassroots Radio. I'm Cynthia Davis and hope you enjoyed our program. Please join us next week when we offer another infusion of truth, honesty, and solutions that will grow people bigger and shrink government smaller. Thank you for joining us. See you next week.
Okay.